Welcome, good evening. It's November 3rd, 2023. The time is 20:48 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you again today. I'm very excited today because I'm realizing new facts about the chronology from the book of 1 Samuel, and hopefully we'll talk about that today. Our study, Little Children, from the Born and Raised article is from chapter 10, paragraph 9. First of all, and we have a lot of ground to cover today. Based on the success of the New Covenant, which is the covenant instituted by Jesus, regarding the number of congregations within Christendom, as compared to different faiths around the world, how absurd is it to claim that Jesus is not the Messiah offered by God? Unfortunately, the vast majority of such congregations are not the fine wheat, but were sown with corruption. We know this because the things they teach are not in harmony with the scriptures at all, but violate proper understanding of the Holy Word and bear bad fruitage. The clergy's involvement in, The clergy's involvement with big business is one case in point. Is wrong, and there are others of lesser significance. Armaments has been the biggest business for some time, and we know how the clergy has rallied men in warfare. Another huge business is drugs, and our society of the Western world is evidently under the control of these. Shocking, but not so impossible to believe, because we see drug companies advertise everywhere in a reprehensible attempt to trick people into thinking drugs are smart. In reality, these are dangerous substances that do not cure any disease, insofar as they are unnatural poison. The proponents of such treatments evidently believe in their own intellect as superior to the human organism. This arrogance makes them believe they can improve it. And, of course, the drug companies are interested in substances that they can patent, which are not natural substances. They're poisons. They're not natural to the body, which makes them automatically poison. Now, that's not to say that there aren't natural ways of improving health. Of course, there's a whole discipline now that are attempting to find ways to reverse aging, and that's a very scary, but it's a very possibly corrupt, but also possibly beneficial pursuit. If we can reverse aging using natural food, you know, using the proper administration of food, of which vitamins make up an important part of all foods. Vitamins are part of foods, of course, are contained in food. But we can't get into that discussion today. I've been watching a lot of videos recently on YouTube about many, many people who are attempting to find ways to reverse aging, some of which is more questionable, and some of which is using natural substances such as good food and knowledge about the vitamins in the food, and even in some cases food supplements are highly recommended. But I don't agree with many of the supplements that are recommended. Let's be clear, I'm only interested in the ones that give overall health, not ones that alter one symptom, which is what drugs typically are intended to do, is to reverse or prevent certain symptoms from occurring without actual benefit, without any actual benefit to the human organism. They don't benefit health in any way, but they prevent certain symptoms. Like, they want to reduce high blood pressure, they give statins. I mean, the list is huge about all the substances they use, and these are not the right treatments. There are ways of giving total health, which overall health can be achieved instead of attempting to achieve the reversal of one symptom. Mind you, you know, if you can find the right treatment that gives overall health, it should reverse all the negative symptoms also. Vitamin K2 can reverse arthritis. I really believe that. I've seen it firsthand. And it reverses heart disease. It's well documented. It's well believed. It's commonly taught nowadays. It's the MK7 form of vitamin K2 that reverses heart disease by reversing the calcium buildup in the arteries. But it's not the vitamin that does that. It's the combination of the vitamin K2 in the MK7 form with vitamin D3 and also with vitamin D in some form that creates the proper conditions for the reversal of those by creating the proper natural substance in the body that then permits the calcium from being to be removed from the arteries and from the joints and put in the bones. But without vitamin K2, without that, and without vitamin D, it can't happen. It doesn't work. You can't initiate that reversal. So now, before we talk too long on that, we've got a lot of things to cover here. So that concludes our study of the Born and Raised article for today. And our Proverbs for today, little ones, is from Ecclesiastes chapter 3. But I'm really excited. I'm excited about the prospect of health as well. But that's not my main excitement today. It's about the chronology in the book of 1 Samuel. First of all, Ecclesiastes chapter 3 says there is a time to kill in verse 3 and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build. So to do with health, there's a time to heal, right? And there's a time to build up the body's immune system, build all the defenses and build all the healthy joints and everything in the body, all the healthy parts of the body, the vessels for the blood and everything, the lymph, all of it to be built up. Now, it's no longer the time to kill in warfare, which it used to be. But in the Christian faith, there's no time to kill. We don't kill. We don't go to war in a physical sense in the Christian faith. So it's no longer a time to kill in that sense. Although Jesus and Jehovah will decide when and if it's time to kill, and the wicked will turn upon each other and kill each other, of course. And now, sometimes we have to break down in the sense that we break down the harmful deposits in the arteries and in the joints in our healing, those undesirable conditions of aging. There are also conditions of aging that can be reversed with certain therapies. And I'm studying, there's talking about genes that you can turn on, that there's a backup copy of the DNA and that you can turn on certain genes in the body that, I'm not really believing that that's necessarily the proper thing to do or the proper method. I'm not believing necessarily yet that the proper way to heal the body is to pursue the therapies that are being discussed by any one particular individual or any one particular approach. I'm not endorsing. At this point, I'm not. I'm interested. I've definitely been interested in calcium, the main mineral in the body, and magnesium and vitamin D and vitamin K2. Those are the things that I've learned about. But there have been many other things that I've learned about as well, which I can't discuss today because there's not enough time at all. Just don't have time to discuss everything in one study. But we will get to them, hopefully. Now we're ready, I think, to study 1 Samuel chapter 3. So we've seen that Samuel became a person lent to Jehovah. He was loaned to Jehovah while Eli was judging Israel, or while he was priest at least. But when we see, the interesting factor is in chapter 4 of 1 Samuel, Eli dies at the same time that his sons do when the Philistines capture the Ark of Jehovah. And at the time, Eli is 98 years old, it says in verse 15 of 1 Samuel chapter 4. So he's 98 years old when he dies, Eli. So we know that. And we know the time when that happened, when the Philistines captured the Ark. It was just after they defeated Israel. And that was in, it's 1152, or just slightly after 11, the time when they captured, when they defeated Israel in battle in 1152, is when they captured the Ark, and that's when Eli died. That's from chapter 4, which we will hopefully get to tomorrow. But knowing that Eli was 98 in the year 1152 is what the approximate chronologies, the timeline gives us, assuming they captured the Ark very soon after Israel was defeated, the Philistines captured the Ark very soon after they defeated Israel in battle, which it looks like is true, but, you know, there could have been a slight amount of time pass. But 1152 plus 98 gives us a birth. Sorry, 11. No, Eli died in 1132. That's right. That's right. They defeated Israel in battle. They defeated Israel in battle in 1132 then, because they captured the Ark at the time Eli died, and Eli died in 1132. Why do we believe that? Let me think. Don't we believe Eli? Yeah, Eli died in 1132, but the Philistines were ruling from 1152. Yeah, the Philistines were ruling this whole time, for some time. But we know that because that's the 300 years of Jephthah, not 30. 300 years of Jephthah mean that from 1452 BCE, 300 years passed before Jephthah began to rule, or before the Ammonites. The Ammonites? Yeah, Ammonites and the Philistines began to dominate. As we've already discussed from the book of Judges, we've already explained that in our previous studies. So 1152, the Philistines began to rule, and they didn't capture the Ark until Eli died. Eli didn't die until they captured the Ark. But he'd been ruling Israel at that time for 40 years according to the Masoretic text, and 20 years according to the Septuagint. So because it was 20 years in the Septuagint, that gave us the 20-year division where Eli had been judging 20 years during the time of the Philistine domination from 1152 to 1132 on the west side of the Jordan. And we know the Ammonites were on the east side of the Jordan, where Jephthah began to judge only after 18 years of their domination, which began in 1152 on the east side of the Jordan. But Eli, it appears from this, what we know, and the 20 years of the judgeship of Samson, who was from 1132 to 1112, at which time Samuel began to judge when the Philistines were defeated. So Eli must have ended in 1132, makes perfect sense, with Samson from 1132 to 1112 BCE. I mean, Eli, we have no better choice or guess to make than Eli from 1172 to 1132, those 40 years, with 20 of those years being prior to the Philistine oppression. So it's consistent with the Septuagint saying that Eli had judged 20 years. It's perfectly in harmony because the Philistines began to dominate and oppress for those 40 years after those first 20 years of Eli. So knowing that, if we have the date of death of Eli in 1132, if that's correct, then we add 1132 plus 98 and we get 1230 as his birth. The year 1230 is the birth of Eli in the BCE era. And then when he began to judge in 1172, he would be 58 years old. Just 28 plus 30, he's 58 years old when he began to judge. But we also know Eli would have been a priest from the age of 30 or 25 when they began to be priests. The Levites served from the age of 25, but the priests from age 30. So in the year 1200, precisely, according to this chronology, the genealogy, we have Eli beginning to be a priest in exactly the year 1200, 100 years before Saul became king, exactly in the year 1100 BCE. So Eli is priest starting in 1200, and his two sons, of course, when he was 30, might have been both born at that time. So 25 years later, well, even let's say 1200, yeah, 25 years later, or let's say 30 years later, in 1170, his two sons could both be priests, because he could have had two sons both born prior to Eli's being 30 years old. Both of his sons could have been born before he was 30 years old, before the year 1200. So even by the year 1172, both of his sons could have been 30 years old, and they could have been priests at that time, 1172, when Eli was judging. And that could be around the time when Hannah became pregnant and gave birth to Samuel. Or he could have been a little later, but we know that Samuel was old when Saul became king. And so that was 1100. So if Samuel had been 70 years old, if that were the definition of old, then he would have been born in 1170 for Samuel, for his birth. And so it's remarkable. But all the while, the boy Samuel was ministering to Jehovah before Eli, and word from Jehovah had become rare in those days. There was no vision being spread abroad. Now, what we see in 4, okay, what happened in 2? Right. But there's a little sleeveless coat. There's a coat that Eli's. The boy Samuel is ministering to Jehovah, right? And Eli, even in chapter 2 of Samuel, he's very old already. And we know that at this point, his sons were doing bad things. But Samuel was growing bigger in verse 26. In verse 22, Eli was very old. So Samuel growing bigger means he's probably about 10 years old or something like that. He's growing bigger. It's really consistent with everything that we're studying here. The chronology is very consistent with everything. But if Samuel's 10 years old, I mean, then that's about the year 1160 or so. So how old would Eli be? He'd be 70 years old. If Samuel was 10 years old, so because Eli was probably born about 1230, very in that time period. Assuming he died, he was exactly within a year or so born in 1230. If he died in 1132, it's because he was 98 years old at his death. So it's really remarkable. We can work it out. That's the thing. We can work things out. So the boy Samuel was ministering. Now it came about that Eli was lying in his place and his eyes had begun to grow dim. So he's getting old. You know, he might have been, maybe Samuel now is 20 years old and Eli is, you know, in 1150, he's 80 years old. He was not able to see. And the lamp of God was not yet extinguished. And Samuel was lying in the temple of Jehovah where the ark of God was. And Jehovah proceeded to call Samuel. At this he said, "Here I am." And he went running to Eli and saying, "Here I am, for you called me." But he said, "I did not call. Lie down again." So he went and lay down. And Jehovah went on to call yet again, "Samuel." At this, Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you did call me." But he said, "I did not call, my son. Lie down again." As regards Samuel, he had not yet come to know Jehovah, and the word of Jehovah had not yet begun to be revealed to him. Okay, he'd not yet come to know Jehovah. So he's possibly at this point, he's young. You know, he's still young, maybe. Okay, so maybe he's still, you know, about... if he's born 1170 and Eli's 70 years old in year 1160, then Samuel's about 10 years old, maybe. As regards Samuel, he'd not come to know Jehovah yet. And so Jehovah called again for the third time, Samuel, verse 8. At that he got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you must have called me." And Eli began to discern that it was Jehovah that was calling the boy, consequently. Eli said to Samuel, "Go lie down, And it must occur that if he should call you, you must say, speak, Jehovah, for your servant is listening. So Samuel went and lay down in his place. Then Jehovah came and took his position and called, as at the other time, Samuel, Samuel. At this Samuel said, speak, for your servant is listening. And Jehovah went on to say to Samuel, look, I am doing something in Israel, which if anyone hears about, both his ears will tingle. On that day I shall carry out toward Eli all that I have said respecting his house from beginning to end. And you must tell him that I am judging his house to time indefinite for the error that he has known, because his sons are calling down evil upon God, and he has not rebuked them. And that is why I have sworn to the house of Eli that the error of the house of Eli will not be brought to exemption from punishment by sacrifice or by offering to time indefinite. And Samuel continued lying down until the morning. Then he opened the doors of Jehovah's house. So he's old enough to open the doors of Jehovah's house, however old that is, which makes you think that he's not terribly young. You know, and Samuel was afraid to tell Eli of the appearing. But Eli called Samuel and said, Samuel, my son. At this he said, here I am. And he went on to say, what is the word that he has spoken to you? Do not please hide it from me. May God do so to you, and may he add to it, if you should hide from me a word of all the word that he has spoken to you. So Samuel told him all the words, and he did not hide anything from him. At that he said, it is Jehovah. What is good in his eyes, let him do. And Samuel continued growing up, and Jehovah himself proved to be with him, and did not cause any of all his words to fall to the earth. So Samuel continued growing up. So when someone's growing up, they're typically, maybe he's a teenager, or, you know, he's not past the age of growth, it sounds like. He's growing up. He's not a man yet. He's not 20 years old, possibly. So that fits well. And all Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, became aware that Samuel was one accredited for the position of prophet to Jehovah. So maybe he's in his, you know, early teens, or he's somewhere in, you know, before he's 20 years old, maybe. And Jehovah proceeded to appear again in Shiloh, because Jehovah revealed himself to Samuel in Shiloh by the word of Jehovah. Remarkable. It really is, isn't it? So, what happened? Oh, it crashed. Program crashed. Crashed on me. It crashed. No, it didn't. Okay, hang on. It just quit again. Okay. What's wrong? Okay, let's do this. Let's go back to where we were, if we can. History. 1 Samuel 5. The Philistines took the ark. See, there's something about Jehovah, something about Samuel wearing a little ephod. And this is not it. I thought it was at the beginning of one of these chapters. His mother made him a little sleeveless coat. Where was that? I read that. But we don't have time to study that in detail today. I'll look it up again. So, I mean, this is about the time when Samuel's approaching maybe the age of teens or 20 years old. Eventually he became 20. But it said in verse 1 of chapter 4 of 1 Samuel, which is our next chapter for tomorrow, that the word of Samuel continued to come to all Israel, and then, so that's some time passing. Then Israel went out to meet the Philistines in battle, and this is where the Philistines defeated them. And that's when, that's the year 1132, because that's when Eli died after the Philistines captured the ark, because they took the ark immediately after being defeated there. So it's the same year in which they brought the ark out, and they lost the ark to the Philistines. In that year 1132, in our chronology, it fits perfectly. Eli is at that point 98 years old. And what that means in 1132, if Samuel was born in 1170, he is at that point 38, is he not? 38 years old at that point. But, you know, he's not starting to judge Israel until he gets to be a little bit older. So that means he started judging when he was 58 also, because that would be 20 years later. In 1112, he would be 58, if we have his birth date correct, when he started to judge. And then when he was, after he'd been judging 12 years, he'd be 70 years old. He'd be old when Saul became king. So it all fits really, really well. So that's why it's so exciting to know that this word of God, the Bible, is accurate chronologically, not just accurate in other ways, but it's accurate chronologically. That's extremely important for the establishment of history. I don't think we're going to have time today to do all this. Jeremiah. We won't have time to do Jeremiah, I don't think. No fatherless boy. Oh, my God. It's so beneficial to read all this, yet we don't have time. We'll do Hebrews first, and then we'll come back. I think that's what we'll do. And it's sad that the program crashed. It doesn't happen very often. Hebrews chapter 7. For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham, returning from the slaughter of the kings, and blessed him, and to whom Abraham apportioned a tenth from all things, is first of all, by translation, king of righteousness, and is then also king of Salem, that is, king of peace, in being fatherless, motherless, without genealogy, having neither a beginning of days nor an end of life. We don't know anything about the mother and father of Melchizedek. But having been made like the Son of God, he remains a priest perpetually. Behold, then, how great this man was, to whom Abraham, the family head, gave a tenth out of the chief spoils. True, the men from the sons of Levi, who received their priestly office, have a commandment to collect tithes from the people according to the law, that is, from their brothers, even if these have issued from the loins of Abraham. But the man who did not trace his genealogy from them took tithes from Abraham and blessed him who had the promises. Now, without any dispute, the less is blessed by the greater. And in the one case, it is men who are dying that receive tithes, but in the other case, it is someone of whom it is witnessed that he lives. That's Jesus. And if I may use the expression, through Abraham, even Levi, who received tithes, has paid tithes, for he was still in the loins of his forefather when Melchizedek met him. Levi was still in the loins of Abraham, that is. If then perfection were really through the Levitical priesthood, for with it as a feature the people were given the law, what further need would there be for another priest to arise according to the manner of Melchizedek, and not said to be according to the manner of Aaron? For since the priesthood is being changed, there comes to be of necessity a change also of the law. For the man respecting whom these things are said has been a member of another tribe from which no one has officiated at the altar. For it is quite plain that our Lord has sprung up out of Judah, a tribe about which Moses spoke nothing concerning priests. That's Jesus was from the tribe of Judah. And it is still more abundantly clear that with a similarity to Melchizedek, there arises another priest who has become such, not according to the law of a commandment depending upon the flesh, but according to the power of an indestructible life. For in witness it is said, you are a priest forever, according to the manner of Melchizedek. That was a prophecy from Psalm 110, wasn't it? Psalm 110 and 4. Certainly then, there occurs a setting aside of the preceding commandment on account of its weakness and ineffectiveness. For the law made nothing perfect, but the bringing in besides of a better hope did, through which we are drawing near to God. Also, to the extent that it was not without a sworn oath, for there are indeed men that have become priests without a sworn oath, but there is one with an oath sworn by the one who said respecting him, Jehovah has sworn, and he will feel no regret. You are a priest forever. That's Psalm 110 again. To that extent also, Jesus has become the one given in pledge of a better covenant. Furthermore, many had to become priests in succession because of being prevented by death from continuing as such. But he, because of continuing alive forever, has his priesthood without any successors. Consequently, he is able also to save completely those who are approaching God through him, because he is always alive to plead for them. For such a high priest as this was suitable for us, loyal, guileless, undefiled, separated from the sinners, and become higher than the heavens. He does not need daily, as those high priests do, to offer up sacrifices, first for his own sins and then for those of the people. For this he did once for all time when he offered himself up. For the law appoints men high priests, having weakness, but the word of the sworn oath that came after the law appoints a son who is perfected forever. He offered himself up once for all time for sin. He didn't have to do it daily and doesn't have to do it daily now. He's a son who is offered by the word of the sworn oath, appointed as a priest who is perfected forever. That's Jesus, our Lord and Savior. Now, can we do anything about Jeremiah chapter 7? Do we have time? The word that occurred to Jeremiah from Jehovah saying, stand in the gate of the house of Jehovah, and you must proclaim there this word, and you must say, hear the word of Jehovah, all you Judah, all you of Judah who are entering into these gates to bow down to Jehovah. This is what Jehovah of armies, the God of Israel, has said. Make your ways and your dealings good, and I will keep you people residing in this place. Do not put your trust in fallacious words, saying, the temple of Jehovah, the temple of Jehovah, the temple of Jehovah you are. For if you will positively make your ways and your dealings good, if you will positively carry out justice between a man and his companion, if no alien resident, no fatherless boy, and no widow you will oppress, and innocent blood you will not shed in this place, and after other gods you will not walk for calamity to yourselves, I in turn shall certainly keep you residing in this place in the land that I gave to your forefathers, from time indefinite even to time indefinite. Here you are putting your trust in fallacious words. It will certainly be of no benefit at all. Can there be stealing, murdering, and committing adultery, and swearing falsely, and making sacrificial smoke to Baal, by walking after other gods whom you had not known? And must you come and stand before me in this house upon which my name has been called? And must you say, we shall certainly be delivered in the face of doing all these detestable things? Has this house upon which my name has been called become a mere cave of robbers in your eyes? Here I myself also have seen it. Is the utterance of Jehovah. Jesus called, he mentioned the cave of robbers too. However, go now to my place that was in Shiloh, where I caused my name to reside at first, and see what I did to it because of the badness of my people Israel. And now for the reason that you kept doing all these works is the utterance of Jehovah. And I kept speaking to you, getting up early and speaking. Jeremiah refers, in this book of Jeremiah, Jehovah refers to Shiloh, where Eli and his sons were. But you did not listen, and I kept calling, but you did not answer. I will do also to the house upon which my name has been called, in which you are trusting, and to the place that I gave to you and to your forefathers, just as I did to Shiloh. The temple would be destroyed, and I will throw you out from before my face, just as I threw out all your brothers, the whole offspring of Ephraim. And as for you, do not pray in behalf of this people. Now, the offspring of Ephraim, of course, was the northern kingdom of Israel. And they were separated from Jehovah when they split off from the kingdom of Judah. And as for you, do not pray in behalf of this people, neither raise in their behalf an entreating cry or a prayer, nor beseech me, for I shall not be listening to you. Are you not seeing what they are doing in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem? And let's go down to the worst part of what they were doing, which was to offer their sons. In the valley of Hinnom, they have built the high places of Topheth to burn their sons, verse 31, and their daughters in the fire, a thing I had not commanded. So they were defiling true worship by sacrificing their sons and daughters by burning them alive. That's what they were doing. Such a shocking thing. They were doing that because that's what the other nations were doing. They were following the acts of the other false worshippers. That's it for today. It's November 3rd, 2023, 21:22 hours, Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. This is Crow, on my behalf, and Cassie, my two watches, saying bye for now.